Well, tell me a little bit about your day, because you were helping care for your family as well.
Yes. So I live in Sandoval County. I'm the Sandoval County treasurer. After the governor put in the state of emergency, I started working on plans to get my office to telework so that we can start preparing for what we knew was coming and would get worse before it got better. And so my office has been closed to the public for a couple of weeks. The county now closed the offices permanently in the administration building until further notice to protect both the staff. We have over 423 employees, as well as our taxpayers, our constituents that come in on a daily. So I have been in Las Vegas, New Mexico with my mother and father and my great aunt, who's 95 years old. And my mom has been caregiving for her for many years, but now that we are dealing with COVID-19, we're being very safe about anyone coming around her. So my life has consisted predominantly of the three of them, except when we do donation activities or food banks or commodity distribution. And so that has changed my life about 180 from traveling 17 counties, going to several different events almost every single day, along with working my day job, to working from home, constantly meeting people on Zoom meetings and a lot of conference calls.
Okay. And you said that you were going to watch Mass with her. Was that on television?
Yes. So every Sunday morning, she watches Mass from home for many years now because it's hard to get out of the house. And so we enjoyed Mass together on the TV and then make a pretty awesome breakfast right afterwards. So it's a really good tradition of ours to go over there after church and meet her. But now all of us are just going over there first thing in the morning.
Are you able actually to get work done of your day job?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Yes. It has been quite busy, but I have my chief deputy, who's my arms and my legs in my office, and having access to online and conference calls has been very helpful. So we're figuring it all out. But yes, it has been a little bit of a process to get everybody teleworking, but we are almost there. We still have staff working in the office, but only a few per day and separate hours. Some are in the morning, some are in the afternoon, only for specific things they need to pick up to go back to their houses to work. And anyone who is high risk is not going into the office at all. If we need to drop something off to them, we'll do that, leave it on their front porch. But we're trying to keep everyone safe and respect the governor's request to stay at home as best as we can. But at the same time, we're preparing for our second half tax season, which begins April 10th. So it has definitely been a transition, but we are working through it just like all other New Mexicans and Americans.
Tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure. I have 17 years of federal, state, and local government experience. I was born, raised, and educated in Las Vegas, New Mexico. I earned my bachelor's degree in political science and psychology and my master's degree in public affairs, both from New Mexico Highlands University. And I studied at the University of Costa Rica for 1 year as a Rotary Scholar. And in that year, I studied international relations and Spanish. There's been several different capacities that I've worked in. I started working for one of the high-ranking senators in Senate Finance at the New Mexico Legislature when I was working on my master's degree. And I fell in love with the legislative process. And it was amazing to me that you can help thousands of people all at once with creating a law. I also saw how you can sometimes negatively impact people if you're not very careful on how you analyze the unintended consequences that could occur with any policies that are written. After that, I ended up working at the New Mexico Legislature in almost every single capacity you could think of, from enrolling and engrossing to a journal clerk, to committee secretary, to an analyst. And I worked in both the House and the Senate, so I got to learn a lot about the policies, the legislative process, and the people who have been working there for many years, as well as the legislators. And so those built relationships have really helped me as the county treasurer to be able to get about 20 bills passed in the last 7 years that have helped remove tax loopholes. They've helped our senior citizens, our disabled, our veterans. There's several of the bills that our treasurer's affiliate has worked on throughout that course, and me being the legislative chair for the treasurer's affiliate on my website at lauramontoya4nm.com. I also worked at the state treasurer's office under Douglas Minge Brown and also Treasurer James B. Lewis. And that was my first real big grasp, other than when I was in Senate Finance, on the overall budget and the importance of investments within government and the permissibility of those investments and how it all interacts with policy. Of course, I also worked at Children, Youth, and Family for a little bit, and Human Services. I was the marketing and outreach coordinator for Insure New Mexico New MexiKids. So that gave me a good highlight on Medicaid and Insure New Mexico and healthcare in general.
Well, in New Mexico, since we have a citizens legislature, having that experience as staff and research really puts you in a good position to be able to influence legislation, because staff are really needed in New Mexico since legislators don't spend full time doing it.
Absolutely. That experience in itself made me really love public service and the idea of being able to help so many people. I'm very fortunate that they sort of taught me from a young age when I first started working there, and I feel like that was my second home. I grew up in that building, and a lot of the staff who are really the fundamental root of, or the foundation of that building, or what comes out of it, really guide the legislators that come in as public servants that are elected to help their communities. And they sort of give them that really good institutional guidance of how best to get things done. So I was very fortunate that I had that experience, and that helped me as county treasurer when I first was elected in 2013. There was an issue that the staff had brought up, and I said, well, you know, we're losing millions of dollars off of this loophole, and it's not fair that elderly people and working families are paying these taxes and other folks that are maybe investors or know the system are not when they combine or split property. I said, how do we fix it? You know, what's the solution? And they said, well, we'd have to get a law passed. And I said, awesome, that's easy. And they looked at me like, yeah, right. That is not easy. And for me, I just had been so involved in the process for so many years that I knew it very well. And so I felt like, you know, this is my way to be able to contribute to my team and show them that I'm a part of their team. And that's what I'm best at. So we got two bills passed that year. That bill helped with removing tax loopholes, and it brought in millions of dollars that first year to all different counties in the state of New Mexico. So it turned out wonderful. And since then, we've had about 19 bills passed in the past 7 years.
Well, what made you decide to have a focus on federal office or on the national government?
I see so many problems that I really want to assist in, and now I have the skill and the tools to be able to be utilized to do it. As the county treasurer, I am the only treasurer on the New Mexico Tax Policy Committee, and I was the only elected official for 5 of the 7 years that was appointed by the National Association of Counties president to be a vice chair of a standing committee for the National Association of Counties. So for the past 5 years, I have been vice chair of that committee, and that committee has three subcommittees under it. One of them is tribal government, which of course is important to me because we have 23 different tribal governments in New Mexico. Most of them are in Sandoval County, where I live and serve. The other one is, of course, finance and pensions. And then the third one is elections, which is not my specialty, but it is under that same committee. And, of course, very important because we want to make sure we have integrity in our elections for people to feel that their vote is being counted and that everything is ethical and to the highest standard. And what I think a lot of people don't recognize is that no matter what issue is important to you, they all have a nucleus. And that nucleus, the root, is finances. And there's two parts to that. One is your tax reform, which right now is in a critical state of emergency because most of the Trump tax reforms are going to go into effect in 2021. And most people don't know how bad or negative they're going to impact us, especially after this pandemic. The second part of that is your budget allocation. You know, if you care more about education, maybe having trades be more substantial, especially in a rural community, you need to allocate funds in that direction. And the only way you can do that is if you have some type of authorization or authority involving the budget. So I decided that Congress was the next step for me to be able to serve my community in a capacity that allows me more authority to be able to do so. As county treasurer, I think I've been able to accomplish quite a bit with my treasurer's affiliate in the past 7 years. I feel that we've served our community very well. I've done my best to serve them, and we've had a clean audit for the last 2 years, which the county had not had in 20 years. We have a 99.37% collection rate, which is substantial because when you have everyone paying a little bit, then everyone gets to pay less. We've gotten all of those bills passed that have helped our veterans, our seniors, our disabled, remove tax loopholes, several things for operations to be much more forward-thinking instead of bureaucratic. And now there's other issues I want to work on that I don't have the authority to work on as a county treasurer, like broadband services. Right now during this pandemic, you can see how important broadband services would be for our school children to be able to have access to their teachers and to resources online so that they can continue to learn as they're staying at home. You have businesses that could have adapted a different way of business thinking had they had the internet capability to be able to do that. You have Zoom meetings that people are now having every week for their businesses or for their government meetings or wherever they work. And if you don't have good service, you keep getting cut off and you're missing out on the importance of whatever you're discussing. So there's just several topics that I really need to focus on and that I can now use the tools from my policymaking, my networking, my relationships, my education, and my elected experience and bundle them all up to help New Mexico to move forward.
I am awed by your experience and by your ambitions for making changes, but I wonder if from your experience in New Mexico, it might be better to be on executive basis in order to get done what you're thinking about. Congress seems so, you know, that they just aren't getting much done.
Well, people have said that before about county treasurers, that they never really had gotten anything done except property taxes. And now we have 20 bills under our belt when a county treasurer's affiliate hadn't gotten one bill passed in 20 years. You have policies that we've driven as part of NACO that have helped at the federal level, like advanced refunding on municipal bonds, the 40% excise tax, you know, the Cadillac tax. All of those things have been pushed. As a staffer, you have a lot of flexibility to get a lot done because no one's paying attention to your moves.
Yeah.
That's why I love being a staffer. As an elected official, I've had to learn to develop that skill set and build the relationships of other elected officials and staffers to help me to push policy forward that is going to help the overall good or common good of everyone. So, for example, I'm on the Rural Action Caucus. One of the things that I would really like to do is, well, there are several county elected officials in the Rural Action Caucus, and they all have built relationships with their congressional delegation. So having those relationships, getting to meet them from that level, understanding already many of the other states and their issues that are very similar to ours, having that foundation can help us to drive the legislation to push forward to get it done. And so I'm very good at that part of creating policies that actually get implemented and signed, and usually it's in a bipartisan effort.
So are you talking about being able to create policies that have become legislation on the federal level or on the state level?
Okay. At the federal level. The National Association of Counties is elected officials that represent 3,069 counties in the United States. And we come together figuring out what legislation that we can push as counties forward to the national level for policies to be created or fixed. And so the advanced refunding on municipal bonds, the 40% excise tax on how government insurance, all of those issues at the national level affect us at the county level. Payment in lieu of taxes and secure rural schools. I fought on Capitol Hill every year having a press conference, talking to different congressional folks, both staffers and the actual congressmen and women, about the importance of having the payment in lieu of taxes and the secure rural schools funding for New Mexico. And I don't just want to go beg for it every single year and then wait to see whether or not we get it in our budget, because financially that does not help the people who have to budget for it. What I would like to propose as the first Congresswoman to represent District 3 is putting that as a line item within the actual budget, so that when Congress passes that budget, it automatically is already in there, and then counties can start working on the projects that need to get taken care of, knowing how much they're going to receive for that next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to be clear of what level we were talking about. Have you ever had someone say, because you're a woman, that sort of assume that you're not up on the numbers or that you have difficulty with that, with math?
Oh, Susan, I like the days when I don't have that problem. It's interesting. We were at the Women's March in Santa Fe, which, you know, we're at a Women's March. You would think you're on peaceful ground, but I literally had people say, oh, you're bright. You know, you're a great woman. You know, you have a lot of experience, but, you know, maybe you should wait your turn. And I'm thinking, because I look young, doesn't mean I don't have the experience to do the job. In fact, you can add up all of my opponents, except probably one of them, all of the experience they have in government, and I would still surpass them in that. So it's very frustrating. As a county treasurer coming into a room, I went to my first investment meeting, and I was wearing black and white, and I put my hair up in a bun because it was really humid, and I have curly hair. And I walked in, and the man said, can you get me some coffee, creamer, and sugar, please? And I looked at him and I said, absolutely. And so I got him his coffee and then I went to go sit down. I was already a vice chair of a subcommittee at that time, and he was shocked. And so it was a learning opportunity, a teaching moment to make people understand that I know you have these different ideas, what a treasurer looks like, what an investor looks like, what a congressperson looks like. But if we truly believe in the idea that if you work hard to get where you're at, if you do the job, if you have the education, the experience, you're the best qualified for that position, they should not eliminate or stop you from taking that opportunity to serve. And as a county treasurer, I'm very grateful that Sandoval County believed in me, because at that time I was young, and it was very unusual for people to see a young woman managing over, you know, right now I invest over $40 million. My tax rule is over $1,141 million. And I have about $50 million of non-property tax revenue in the bank. Most people would see me at face value and say, oh, you know, she looks like Dora the Explorer. But the reality is that I have been working on finances since I was 17 years old managing a grocery store. And so all of my years of experience have really developed me in the direction and in the journey of public service. And so when you talk about electability, I'm the only candidate that's been elected not once, but twice in the fastest growing county in the state of New Mexico. And it's the second largest county in District 3. My county, Sandoval, represents Pueblos, two Navajo chapters, the Apaches, cities, towns, villages, which is really a microcosm of District 3. But people also seem to forget that I was born and raised and have generations of living in New Mexico. I am from Las Vegas and Mora, which are two of the poorer counties in the state of New Mexico, and have really had to work for every single thing that I have ever gotten, including this, especially because we've never had a woman represent us. We've never had a Latina. This would be the first time in our state's history to be able to send all of our congressional delegation to Washington, and all three of us would be women of color. How forward-thinking is that?
Have you had been in contact with any of the women who are currently serving the new class of women that just began in Congress?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I will tell you an awesome story. So she taught us, I asked her if she, so I'm also chair of Next Generation, which is the young elected officials in the United States. And I asked her if she would do me the honor of being my guest speaker in Washington when we were up there in March. This was right before the state of emergency and a week before the state convention, the Democratic State Convention. And so I told her that what we really focus on is the idea of crossing boundaries, being able to overcome different ideologies. Sochi Torres is in a district that is really a 50-50 split. She's the first Democrat. She's the first Latina woman to ever represent that district. She's had to learn how to really walk a fine line of true public service in how she communicates with everyone in her district. And so I wanted her to talk to our group about what are some of those challenges, especially as a young woman who has really crossed that, broken that ceiling. How does she overcome not just the challenges on the political spectrum, but the challenges within Congress and what people assume on that end, and how she crosses party lines to build bridges to create policies that are going to help her community. And those are a lot of the same challenges that we could all learn from. And so she went to our Next Generation Network meeting and spoke to all of us and did an excellent job. Deb Holland, I believe, is amazing. You know, she broke the ceiling as well in being the first Native American woman to ever represent us. I know there's two in the United States, but I'll always say Deb Holland is the first. I definitely want to build a partnership of working with them as my colleagues and bring my 20 years of government experience, both, you know, from the federal and state level, but now as the local elected office level, so that we can work diligently together to really help New Mexico move forward.
Well, I'm talking to Laura Montoya, and she is a candidate for Congress in District 3 for New Mexico, one of three women on the Democratic side and two women on the Republican side running for that position. And thank you for sharing all your ideas, and thank you for talking to us.
Thank you so much for your time. My website is lauramontoya4nm.com, and if you have any questions or would like to see a little bit more about my experience and the issues that are important to me to move New Mexico forward, you can go onto the website and find my contact information.
Oh, you know, that reminds me, I wanted to ask you quickly about a couple issues that we talk about a lot with the listeners, and one of them is reproductive choice. Could you just say where you stand on that?
I believe every woman, every person should have access to health care, and women will never get equal access to pay until we fight for equal access to health care. So So I believe the two and two are hand in hand. And as a Latino woman who, of course, was told to get the coffee, for me, it is very important that we finally have an equal seat at the table, whether it's the healthcare table, the education table, or the pay table.
And what about paid leave, paid family leave?
Oh, my God, I'm so happy you asked that. Did you read about my mom?
No.
Oh, so my mother, Geraldine Montoya, she's now a counselor, educator in the Las Vegas City Schools. But my mother was pregnant with my little brother, Lorenzo, and had been fired. She was told that if she didn't come back to work the day after she gave birth, when she was pregnant with him, that she would be demoted, and if she didn't come back to work at all, she would lose her job. And so many years, her and my dad went through a court system. They went all the way to the Supreme Court. My mother is the reason why there is law now that requires that an employer cannot fire you or demote you because of your option to have a child and a family. And so I'm a very strong proponent of that.
Okay, that's great. Well, that certainly tells us where you stand.
Absolutely.
Thanks again. I have
too many strong women in my life there.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing forth your ideas.